Cars, cell phones, microwaves, refrigerators, toasters, televisions. The list is endless. Technology rules our lives. And we love it. Not everyone, though. The Amish don't. They spurn the conveniences most of us could not live without. Donald Crable is the author of The Riddle of Amish Culture. Crable told Steve Paulson that Amish culture is complex.
The Amish are not Luddites that sort of categorically reject all forms of technology. In fact, some technology they accept immediately, like rollerblades, trampolines, gas barbecue grills, and other forms of technology they adapt. And then there are certain forms of technology that they put a taboo on and forbid completely. So probably the best way to say it is that they screen technology and look at what its impact would be on their community, and then based on that judgment, decide to what extent they will use it or reject it and how they might adapt it.
And to the outside world, this is very confusing, and it looks inconsistent. For example, bikes are forbidden, but rollerblades are okay, and many Amish ride in cars, but they're not allowed to drive them. It doesn't seem to make sense, but there is logic there, isn't there?
If you look at the decisions that they make internally and historically from within the Amish context, they make a lot of sense. Their concern with a car is that it would lead to fragmentation of their community. It would take people away. It would enhance mobility so that people wouldn't be engaged in face-to-face communication. So the car is a real threat to the stability and the solidarity of their local community. But over the years, as their communities expand, they've needed to have faster transportation for weddings or funerals or special events. A horse can only go about 20 miles in a day pulling a carriage. And so they gradually, in the 20th century, began to hire local drivers who provided quote-unquote taxi service for them.
These are not Amish people.
That's correct.
Non-Amish taxi drivers.
These are local English neighbors, non-Amish neighbors, that provide the taxi service for them. So that has developed over the years as a standard way of using automotive transportation but not owning it. One of the fundamental principles is that they make a sharp distinction between owning technology and using it. There are certain forms of technology that you can use, but you can't own it. For example, if you rent a facility for a craft shop, you could have electric lights in it because you don't actually own it. But if you own it, then you couldn't have electricity. So it creates a zigzag pattern as far as the use of technology, with telephones at the end of a farm lane but not in the house, with tractors at the barn but not out in the field, with 12-volt electricity from batteries but not 110-volt electricity off of public utility lines, and so on. And it can look very confusing and perplexing to an outsider.
Well, explain this distinction. Why is it okay, for instance, to use electricity if it's generated by a battery, but not if it comes from the local public utility?
Well, historically, that was a distinction. It emerged in the 20th century. I think when public utility lines were moving out into rural areas in the 1920s and the 1930s in many parts of the country, to the Amish, it looked like they were going to be directly connected to the outside world. They were going to become dependent in the outside world. It was going to bring new conveniences. Soon television came along 15, 20 years later, and that really confirmed in their mind that they didn't want to be hooked up, so to speak, to the outside world through public electric, through the utility lines. At the turn of the century, however, they had been using batteries, various types of batteries, and so they said, well, we'll just continue to use electricity from 12-volt batteries, and that distinction has continued. But in more recent years now, they are using inverters, which essentially make homemade 110-volt electricity from a battery. And then they can use that source of electricity to run a typewriter, to run a word processor, to run a cash register, or perhaps cow clippers or something like that. To the Amish way of thinking, electricity coming off of a battery is more self-generated, it's controllable. It doesn't reflect a dependency in the outside world. It doesn't reflect a direct linkage to the outside world. And so, in many ways, it's safer.
Well, I think what's fascinating about this whole story of the Amish's relationship to technology is how it changes over time and how the rules keep getting reinterpreted. And I think it might be useful to actually talk about one example, the telephone, which obviously was a major technological innovation. And the Amish have struggled with that issue over the years, haven't they?
They have, because the telephone really changes the nature of face-to-face communication and face-to-face relationships. Visiting is really the social glue that holds the Amish community together. They prize very much face-to-face communication that's rooted in an explicit social context where you can see the other person, you see how they're dressed, you see where they are seated, how their body posture is being presented, and so on. And the moment you use a telephone, you're communicating with half messages because you don't see the body language, you don't see the symbolism. It's a message that's taken out of the social context. And so they have struggled with the telephone. To this day, they have a taboo on installing telephones within the home. They have gradually permitted phones in some areas for a business, or they permitted them in an outbuilding, or many times they are shared as a community telephone at the end of a farm lane where five or six families may actually use the phone together.
So the idea is that you can use the phone for certain business transactions, or I suppose if there's an emergency, but it's not to be used for idle chit-chat.
And primarily used for making outgoing calls. And so you keep it at a distance. You keep it at the end of the farm lane. You keep it out of the house. You don't let it disturb the family. You don't let outsiders enter your house through the telephone at any moment, but you keep it at a distance. And it's a very interesting parable, and I think this is really the key point of the story. It's an interesting parable about how a human community relates to technology. So the technology is the servant of the community rather than dominating the community. In American life, we tend to be fascinated with every new gadget that comes down the pike, and I think many times don't think through carefully the social impact and the social consequence of the technology, how a microwave, for example, might disrupt family eating patterns and really erode the family meal where the whole family sits down together, whereas the Amish are thinking about how technology serves or doesn't serve the community and what its long-term consequences are.
Now, it seems to me in some ways what you're talking about is a cultural lag, that the Amish will adopt certain technologies many years after they became mainstream in American society. And I guess the question is whether eventually, somewhere down the road, say 50 years from now, will they adopt the technologies that now are common? For instance, cell phones. Will that be considered okay? Or tractors in the field or bicycles? Or will some of these things just always be forbidden?
Well, yes and no. I think some of them will always be forbidden. I think television and computers will probably always be forbidden in terms of their ownership. I really think the rejection of the ownership of the car will remain a sort of landmark part of their identity and definition. So I think some of them will remain long-term taboos. Other issues are much more difficult to predict. It's true that in some ways they lag behind the larger society, but in other areas they accept the new products as they're coming. They are planting genetically altered tobacco, for example. Pulling a tobacco planter with mules, but planting genetically altered tobacco that doesn't have nicotine in it. Hmm. And so I think we will continue to see all these zigzag, perplexing patterns that to the outsider don't make sense. But yet inside the Amish community, there is a kind of cultural logic that if you look at it from their perspective, it does make sense. And it's a reasonable adaptation to the outside world. And it's an attempt to tap some of the fruits of progress while still maintaining their own identity and the integrity of their own culture.
Now, a lot of people say that technology cannot be controlled, that once the genie is out of the bottle, forget it. But I suppose the Amish are the best example that gives the lie to that thinking.
I agree. They are the one human community in North American society that has demonstrated that they have the courage to control technology. They aren't afraid of it. They aren't gullible to it. They try to anticipate what its consequences will be, and they're willing to say no to it. They're willing to put a telephone at the end of the farm lane. They're willing to say, no, we won't own a computer. So in this way, they are very instructive, I think, and helpful to the rest of us to reflect on the dynamics of how we think about and use sophisticated technology.
Donald Krehbiel is the author of The Riddle of Amish Culture. He spoke with Steve Paulson.